I'm Andrew McGregor, and the audience here is awaiting the climax of Henry Wood Day, celebrating the founder conductor of his promenade concerts, which began back in the Queen's Hall in London in August 1895. This afternoon, there was Wood's own Last Night of the Proms programme from a century ago. This evening, the Ulster Orchestra and conductor Paul Watkins are bringing us music inspired by, premiered or championed by Wood himself. Ahead of us still are two works given their British premieres by Wood at the Proms, Sibelius's Corellia Suite and the Waltz and Polonaise from Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin, and between them, Sir Hubert Parry's Symphonic Variations. Sibelius's Corellia Suite was modern music, just 13 years old when Wood conducted it for the first time at a prom concert in 1906, but it was far from the first time he'd programmed Sibelius, starting out in 1901 with the King Christian II Suite, and Sibelius's first symphony 2 years later. 1906, in fact, turned out to be a very good year for Sibelius at the Proms in Saga, Finlandia twice, and that British premiere of Corellia. Then in 1907, Wood programmed Sibelius in no fewer than 12 Proms. Corellia and Finlandia became more or less annual fixtures for a while. Well, the Corellia Suite followed Sibelius's overnight success with his Kullervo Symphony in 1892. Finland's young musical nationalist seemed the obvious choice to write the incidental music for a student tableau at Helsinki University the following year, showing scenes from the history of the Finnish province, Karelia. There was a political edge to the production because of concern about the increasing Russianization of Karelia, and the idea was to put on a fundraising event to fund projects in the province to establish a college of education and to foster Finnish culture in a border region closer to St. Petersburg than to Helsinki. Sibelius knew the area and its folk music well, having spent his honeymoon there the year before, and after the success of the gala concert, when people were turned away from the packed hall, Sibelius reworked the music to leave four numbers, his Corellia Overture, and the suite of three pieces we're about to hear, beginning with the Intermezzo, music written to illustrate Karelian hunters paying their tributes to a Lithuanian duke as he levies his local taxes in a wintry landscape. The second piece is a ballade where the 15th century king sits in his castle with his retinue, listening thoughtfully to a minstrel's song. The march movement that ends the Corellia Suite was played for a scene showing the siege of Kaukosalmi Castle in 1580, with the siege cannons laying waste to the town. The Ulster Orchestra's leader has just tuned them. He's Tamás Kocsis, and here to conduct them in Sibelius's Corellia Suite is Paul Watkins. Thank you. The Karelia Suite by Sibelius, played by the Ulster Orchestra, conducted by Paul Watkins, 104 years after Sir Henry Wood gave the British premiere at a Queen's Hall Promenade concert. And Paul Watkins has just been getting the various sections of the orchestra to take their share of the applause. Horns first, then the trumpets. And we should mention the Ulster Orchestra's cor anglais player, Alison Alter, for that solo in the second movement. Well, just 4 days before Henry Wood first introduced Sibelius to his promenaders in October 1901, he gave the proms premiere of the piece we're going to hear next this evening, the Symphonic Variations by Hubert Parry. They might have played a part in inspiring a rather better-known set of symphonic variations by an English composer. Elgar is known to have admired Parry's piece and began his own Enigma variations a year after Parry's. But the form is quite different. Elgar's are separate character portrayals. Parry's variations are grouped into four main sections and have much more of the unified feeling of a full-blown symphony, with an opening movement, scherzo, slow movement, and finale. Hence the title. The theme, by the way, isn't borrowed, and it doesn't bring with it a title or a subtext. It's Parry's own theme, a six-bar open-ended creation that allows every ending to become part of a new beginning. Parry was 49 when he wrote the piece, director of the Royal College of Music in London, the post he held there until his death in 1918, and there's none of the English pastoral tendency about the music. Parry's style owes its strength and resolution to classical and romantic German tradition. He was an admirer of Buxtehude, Beethoven, Brahms, and Wagner. Henry Wood didn't actually premiere this piece. It was written for a Philharmonic Society concert in 1897, but Wood took up the variations and adopted them for the proms, where they were heard six times between 1901 and 1936. And we're going to hear them again now, played by the Ulster Orchestra, conducted by Paul Watkins. Thank you. The Symphonic Variations by Hubert Parry, performed here at the Royal Albert Hall by the Ulster Orchestra, conducted by Paul Watkins, who in his former life as principal cellist of the BBC Symphony Orchestra must have got to know another piece of Parry's music backwards at the Proms, Jerusalem, lustily performed as tradition dictates in the last night of the Proms, and it will be again this coming Saturday in Elgar's orchestration, although it isn't a Henry Wood innovation, it's a ritual ordained after his death. Well, that was a work Henry Wood premiered at a promenade concert in 1901. Wood conducted the first British performances of several Tchaikovsky scores, the Suite No. 3 and Manfred among them, and before the promenade concerts were even invented, Tchaikovsky's opera Eugene Onegin. He finished it in 1878. It had its first Moscow performance the following year, and 13 years later, Henry Wood, aged 23, conducted the first British production in English translation at the Olympic Theatre in London, which turned out to be a landmark moment for the young conductor. So it's hardly surprising that his affection for Tchaikovsky's score led him to programming the waltz from the opera at the Proms over 30 times, eventually pairing it with the Polonaise, both of which we're about to hear. The waltz is from Tatiana's birthday party in the second act of the opera. The Polonaise is from a grand ball in a St. Petersburg mansion. And here comes Paul Watkins to conduct them both. Thank you. Polonaise, and before it, the waltz from Tchaikovsky's opera Eugene Onegin, a favourite of Sir Henry Wood's ever since he conducted the first British performance of the opera in his early 20s. And those two items were to become regulars under his baton at the Promenade concerts. You've just heard them performed by the Ulster Orchestra, led by Tamás Kocsis, conducted by Paul Watkins. And Paul talked to me earlier about his change of role tonight, having played hundreds of proms as principal cellist of the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and of course more than a few last night, now stepping where Sir Henry Wood stood before him on the podium. I asked him about this sudden change of perspective.
Well, the thing that struck me the most, and we rehearsed yesterday, was there's an incredible clarity of sound on the stage of the Albert Hall, and just being 2 feet higher up in the air, well, actually quite a number more than that, because if you think about where my ears were positioned sitting in the principal cello seat to where they are now standing on a podium that's a couple of feet high, you get a great overview of the orchestra. And I think actually the Albert Hall is a really easy place to balance an orchestra. I found it really thrilling, and I know the sound there and I recognise it very, very well, because it's really in my blood. And to be responsible for all of that sound yesterday for the first time was a really thrilling experience. Really.
Paul Watkins, and you could tell he was absolutely loving being on the podium in those two Tchaikovsky numbers with the Ulster Orchestra. Henry Wood's spirit will still be hovering over our Italian day at the proms tomorrow. 17th century Venice is brought to life for us at lunchtime by Le Poème Harmonique. The Royal Scottish National Orchestra brings us Berlioz's Roman Carnival and Respighi's Pines of Rome in the evening prom. There's Paul Watkins back on the podium. The Ulster Orchestra standing all around him. Cheers from the promenaders. That's two of our concerts tomorrow. The third is the late one, Italian Arias, with the voices of Marie-Nicole Lemieux and Philippe Jaroussky at 10. But ladies and gentlemen, let us toast Sir Henry Wood, the self-taught conductor who premiered over 700 works by more than 350 composers, and without whose drive, dedication and enthusiasm we wouldn't be here at the proms at all. What a debt we owe him. Raise your glasses, and back in Broadcasting House, where the champagne's always on ice, here's Ian Skelly.
Always under lock and key as well, Andrew. Thank you very much indeed. That was Andrew McGregor at the Royal Albert Hall tonight. How fascinating that discussion during the interval about the mood of the times during the Edwardian period. It put the music we heard tonight into its proper context. Well, if you missed that or any of this afternoon's prom or tonight's, don't forget you can hear them all by going to the Radio 3 website and then following the links to the Listen Again page and the BBC iPlayer, bbc.co.uk/Radio 3. Back at the proms, as Andrew said, tomorrow night and at lunchtime. And after the lunchtime visit to Cadogan Hall, there's a chance to hear the prom given a week ago, yesterday, by the Minnesota Orchestra, when they performed under Osmo Vanska, the second of their two visits to the proms this year, in fact. Gil Shaham joined them to play Berg's Violin Concerto, and the evening ended with Beethoven's Choral Symphony, the number 9. You can hear that prom again tomorrow afternoon here on BBC Radio 3, beginning at 2. And what of the morning?
Breakfast on Radio 3. Breakfast on Radio 3, bringing music to life. Weekday mornings from 7 till 10 here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, back to tonight, and our next programme is Words and Music, an uninterrupted sequence of music, poetry and prose, this week on the theme of exile. That begins at 10:30. To take us there, we'll take a trip to Paris to hear the bells of the Church of Saint-Genevieve, as depicted by Marin Marais, played here by the Spectre de la Rose.
Thank you.
Evocative music from 17th century Paris, the sound of the bells of the Church of Saint-Geneviève, as conjured by Marin Marais, who at the age of 23 became court composer to the King, Louis XIV, which meant that although he had to work for the King for 6 months of the year, the rest of his time was his own, free therefore to compose, teach and give plenty of private concerts. The Spectre of the Rose performed his music there, a tremendous kind of jazz-like improvisation on a theme. Well, there's plenty of jazz later tonight on Radio 3 when Julian Joseph will be your host. He's in the chair this week to present Jazz Lineup, and he'll be talking to the bassist with the band Phrenesis, Jasper Hoiby, and their pianist Ivo Neem. You can hear the music they make too, all in Jazz Lineup at 9:45 here on Radio 3. It's now 10:30, time for Words and Music, and the theme this week is Exile. Francis Barber and Greg Hicks read poetry and prose, exploring different reactions to being away from home and its effects, or thinking that home should be somewhere other than it is. The programme begins with the 10th century Anglo-Saxon, the Seafarer.
A song I sing of my sea adventure. The strain of peril, the stress of toil, which oft I endured in anguish of spirit, through weary hours of aching woe. Little indeed can he credit, whose town life pleasantly passes in feasting and joy, sheltered from peril, what weary pain often I've suffered in foreign seas. Nightshades, darkened with driving snow from the freezing north, and the bonds of frost firm locked the land, while falling hail, coldest of kernels, encrusted earth. Yet still, even now, my spirit within me drives me seaward to sail the deep, to ride the long swell of the salt sea wave. Never a day but my heart's desire would launch me forth on the long sea path, fain of far harbours and foreign shores. Yet lives no man so lordly of mood, so eager in giving, so ardent in youth, so bold in his deeds, or so dear to his lord, who is free from dread in his far sea travel, or fear of God's purpose and plan for his fate. Beat of the harp and bestowal of treasure, the love of woman and worldly hope, nor other interest can hold his heart save only the sweep of the surging billows. His heart is haunted by love of the sea. Trees are budding and towns are fair. Meadows kindle and all life quickens. All things hasten the eager-hearted who joyeth therein to journey afar, turning seaward to distant shores. The cuckoo stirs him with plaintive call, the herald of summer with mournful song, foretelling the sorrow that stabs the heart. Who liveth in luxury, little he knows what woe men endure in exile's doom. Yet still, even now, my desire outreaches, my spirit soars over tracts of sea, o'er the home of the whale and the world's expanse. Eager, desirous, the lone sprite returneth. It cries in my ears and it urges my heart to the path of the whale and the plunging sea.
They went to sea in a sieve, they did, in a sieve they went to sea. In spite of all their friends could say, on a winter's morn, on a stormy day, in a sieve they went to sea. And when the sieve turned round and round, and everyone cried, "You'll all be drowned," they called aloud, "Our sieve ain't big, but we don't care a button, we don't care a fig. In a sieve we'll go to sea." Far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. They sailed away in a sieve, they did, in a sieve they sailed so fast, with only a beautiful pea-green veil tied with a ribbon by way of a sail to a small tobacco pipe mast. And everyone said who saw them go, "Oh, won't they soon be upset, you know, for the sky is dark and the voyage is long, and happen what may, it's extremely wrong in a sieve to sail so fast." Far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. The water, it soon came in, it did, the water, it soon came in. So to keep them dry, they wrapped their feet in a pinky paper all folded neat, and they fastened it down with a pin. And they passed the night in a crockery jar, and each of them said, "How wise we are. Though the sky be dark and the voyage be long, yet we never can think we were rash or wrong while round in our sieve we spin." Far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. And all night long they sailed away, and when the sun went down they whistled and warbled a moony song to the echoing sound of a coppery gong in the shade of the mountains brown. "Oh, Timberlow, how happy we are when we live in a sieve and a crockery jar, and all night long in the moonlight pale we sail away with a pea-green sail in the shade of the mountains brown." Far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. They sailed to the Western Sea, they did, to a land all covered with trees. And they bought an owl and a useful cart and a pound of rice and a cranberry tart and a hive of silvery bees. And they bought a pig and some green jackdaws and a lovely monkey with lollipop paws and 40 bottles of Ringbo Ree and no end of Stilton cheese. Far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. And in 20 years they all came back, in 20 years or more, and everyone said how tall they've grown, for they've been to the lakes and the Torrible Zone and the hills of the Chankly Bore. And they drank their health and gave them a feast of dumplings made of beautiful yeast, and everyone said, "If we only live, we too will go to sea in a sieve, to the hills of the Chankly Bore." Far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, Sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. If I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy.
Blow, winds, and crack your cheeks. Rage, blow. You cataracts and hurricanes, spout till you have drenched our steeples, drowned the cocks. You sulphurous and thought-executing fires, vaunt couriers of oak-cleaving thunderbolts, singe my white head, and thou, all shaking thunder, strike flat the thick rotundity of the world, crack nature's moulds, all germens spill at once that make ingrateful man. Rumble thy belly full, spit fire, spout rain. Nor rain, wind, thunder, fire are my daughters,
I tax not you, you elements, with unkindness. I never gave you kingdom, called you children. You owe me no subscription. Then let fall your horrible pleasure. Here I stand, your slave, a poor, infirm, weak, and despised old man. But yet I call you servile ministers that will, with two pernicious daughters, join your high-engendered battles against a head so old and white as this. Oh, 'tis foul.
I will arise and go now, and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin build there, of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honeybee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the vales of the morning to where the cricket sings. There midnight's all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always night and day I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore, while I stand on the roadway or on the pavements grey, I hear it in the deep heart's core.